an ex-NFL running back goes on a wild racist rant. Is it because he's really racist or because of the head trauma? Chicago is attempting to police migrant busing, and, well, it's not working out so very well. The Pope says bless gay couples, or something the media got wrong again, or did they get this one right? Ah, confusion. Also, Colorado's Supreme Court says go ahead and kick Trump off the 2024 ballot, and I'm left wondering if the Constitution even actually matters anymore. Also, does MAGA Forever understand what is going on, finally? I don't know. But I do know this. I'm Andrew Coppins, and for one last time here in 2023, this is a WTF Wednesday edition of Critical Thinking. Good WTF Wednesday to you all. Do not forget you can follow me at The Coppins Show on X or over on Facebook. You can go ahead and make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, the Rumble channel. If you're on X, you will see this show in your feed each and every single day as well. So with that all being said, I want to make a quick announcement because tomorrow's show will be a very interesting show. I'm speaking directly with the one and only Carrie McDonald. That's right, Carrie McDonald, host of the Liberated podcast. If you remember back to last month when we talked to Miley Smith of the Illinois Policy Institute, we spoke to her about the jumbled up mess that is the Invest in Kids Act and what's going on with educational freedom here in the state of Illinois. But this month, when we talk educational freedom, I wanted to bring on somebody who's talking about solutions, not just the problems. But I think it was going to be an absolutely fantastic conversation. And that's, I think, what you're going to see tomorrow. So, Carrie McDonald, you can follow her on X at Carrie_EDU. That's Carrie_EDU. That's Kerry_EDU. And if you haven't checked out the Liberated podcast ever, you really need to. It is an absolutely fantastic podcast that literally talks about everyday people coming up with solutions to educational problems for themselves, for their families, for their communities. It's absolutely fantastic. And I think you would get a lot out of it as a parent, as somebody who might be in tune or want to get in tune with the educational freedom movement. So I'm excited for that tomorrow. And then on Friday, it will be the year in review program. I'm going to look back, at least I will. I'm thinking we might be able to get Pat involved here, but I'm not totally sure yet. But yeah, the two of us will get together. And hopefully the two of us will get together and we'll review our predictions from the beginning of this year. And then from there, we'll see what goes down. I think it'll be an interesting show. There's a lot of really interesting things that happened this year. So we'll take a look at the year in review, and that will be the final show for 2023. I am going to take next week off. I'm going to enjoy some time with family, with friends, and just resting and rejuvenating, and then we will be back on January 2nd of 2024 with predictions for the year 2024, one of the wildest election years in world history, if not the most wild election year in world history. So there's going to be a lot to cover, a lot to talk about, but you can expect a couple more shows this week. And then coming back on January 2nd. All right, with that all having been said, it is a WTF Wednesday. And folks, it is just littered with WTF. That's right. Colorado is up first. Because the Supreme Court of the state of Colorado, well, they said, go ahead and kick Trump off of the 2024 ballot. And apparently, according to them, pre-crime allows you to kick somebody off of the ballot because insurrection. There are a lot of constitutional questions that, frankly, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, so I don't know that I would be giving you anything that you couldn't get anywhere else other than to say this. There are a lot of constitutional questions that need to be answered here and answered quickly by the Supreme Court of the United States. And it's not the only set of questions. But this is exactly what I think is the problem, because this is really, I think, two parts for the left. This is intended to create, number one, a constitutional crisis. This is absolutely intended to do this. This is on purpose. This wasn't them attempting to be necessarily nefarious. This was intentional. This wasn't them attempting to rewrite the Constitution like some on the right are going to tell you. That's not what this really was. But this was about, let's create the chaos. Because out of the chaos comes order. And who seems like the orderly out of this? And when you create a constitutional crisis, what also can happen? More power gobbled up by the executive branch. This is not a happy accident. This is on purpose. This is intentional. This creation of that constitutional crisis was on purpose. You need to know that. Now, reading the Constitution and the 14th Amendment, it is very vague on the insurrection portion, okay? It is absolutely very vague from a pure law perspective. So I am not going to comment on the law because I am not a constitutional law expert. But when I do read the text of the Constitution, and when I know the historical background of the 14th Amendment and why this language was included, it was about what? Excluding the segregationist fighters, the apparatus of the Confederacy from becoming part of the United States government. And the history of how this vague language actually matters to correcting the language or jurisprudence around the language, because that's the context of the vague language, and it matters. It always has to the Supreme Court. When a law or a constitutional amendment is vague, it seeks historical reference points to understand that language. Do I think that this is going to hold constitutional muster? I don't know. I don't know because I don't know the heart of this court. It has shown in at least Amy Coney Barrett and in Kavanaugh and in Gorsuch to be people that are looking at the language, the text, the historical reference points of all laws, whether you want this politically or not, whether you like their decision because politics or not. They have more broadly been contextual and textual conservatives on the court. That's the reality. And I have long talked about this. Just because you don't like their interpretation or that it falls against your political wants or needs, quote unquote, doesn't mean they got the decision wrong. You asked for textual conservatives on the court. And that is largely, minus John Roberts, what Trump delivered in Kavanaugh, in Gorsuch, and in Amy Coney Barrett. You can't say on one hand, I want, you know, true traditional constitutionalists versus the leftist reading of it, and then get the same thing as the leftist reading on the right. That's not what you asked for. All right. So that's why I want to set this up from, I don't know where this is going to fall. I have a inkling that it's likely this will get struck down, because how can you do this prior to charges of insurrection being proven? Unless you want to say, unless they can say, well, in that they never brought charges of insurrection, they never proved them in the court of law back then, but these people were still barred. Again, that could be a constitutional and historical reading of the times. I just don't know for sure. So that's a question of what does it mean for our Constitution? But on a broader scale, I had some thoughts yesterday, and I wanted to bring them to the table, because the other question I have is, does MAGA now understand, MAGA forever now understand what time it is? Do they understand the need for a plan? Do they understand anything that's actually going on? Because the conversations I've had with people who are just dyed in the wool, they're not going anywhere, Donald Trump supporters, they didn't believe this would happen. They didn't believe that, you know, Jack Smith and the DC case would be going forward. They believe that all of this is just a ruse and the Supreme Court will save them all. And I'm going to show you that belief in just a moment. But before I get there, this is exactly my thought. Does MAGA forever get it yet? Do you understand that the things that we have been telling you, myself, Pat, others have been telling you for a year now, they actually plan on doing? So, what is your plan to deal with it? Hope and pray that SCOTUS will stop it all? If they don't, what then? What is your plan? Armed revolt or bloody protests in the streets? How is that going to work? So, will you finally figure it out? Tell us the genius plan that Trump has, because I'm not seeing it. And here's the reality that many in the MAGA Forever crowd don't understand, because short of armed revolution or short of absolute bloody protest in the street, and I'm being real on that, what plan do you have to stop the left? Because the plan of the left is lawfare, lawfare, lawfare. And for the longest time, we have warned North Carolina, Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin. You likely need all four of those states, if not just three of those four states, to go to Donald Trump or to go to the way of red state in the 2024 presidential election for Trump or whomever the nominee is to win. And if that nominee is Donald Trump, we've already seen Colorado. We've already seen inklings. Where else? Oh, that's right. They're all blue Secretary of States. All four of them. Colorado, Nevada, Wisconsin, North Carolina. Michigan is gone. Not going to happen. Pennsylvania would be an interesting scenario at play. I don't know if it leans that direction or not. But what I do know is that at a minimum, getting those four states is how you can win a path to 270. And let me be clear here, because I think I've been clear enough, but in case you haven't heard it yet, my goal in 2024 is to win for liberty. Win. It's not to do anything else. And here's the rub on this. That means in 2024, whomever Team GOP nominates, I think you have to get behind. I'm not the biggest fan of Donald Trump. I believe that his record shows somebody who has talked a big game and produced very little of it. You could talk about his foreign policy wins, and he's had some. The Abrahamic Accords is a massive win. You can talk about the economy, except for you can't talk about the massive amounts of debt that have been racked up. He's part and parcel of the problem. You can't divorce COVID. You can't. there are massive holes. So the time and the place, right, for that argument and that fight is what? In the primary. After that, will it be a time for unity? And I want to go back to this because ultimately my question is twofold. Would you unify around Ron DeSantis? Probably not. And I don't know how you unify with somebody that you call a POS on a daily basis. The Laura Loomers and the MAGA forever, forever, forever crowd online calling DeSantis a POS. And yes, guess what? Ron DeSantis has some really stupid, idiotic people and the trolls on his side too. Both of them are equally bad. But does MAGA forever understand the game that is really being played here? And again, what is the plan to stop it or change the course that we're on? I'm not hearing Donald Trump showcase a plan of resistance. Viva la resistance. His surrogates, and you could tell me, well, that's because Donald Trump and lawfare, right? You're correct. Donald Trump speaking on a plan to overcome all of this would be stupid. You're right. Because it would just pile charge after charge after charge. But his surrogates, but the PACs, but the mounds of endorsed candidates or the candidates who have endorsed Trump can easily be the mouthpiece for that plan. Oh, is the plan coming from Laura Loomer? Is the plan coming from Donald Trump is a godly man? And God is working through Donald Trump to save America? Just simple question. And then I got to this about 10 minutes after I posted this on X. And it was this, the magical prediction. President Trump will be on the Colorado ballot. Remember, we have Clarence Thomas. There it is, folks. But the courts will save our savior. That's the plan. That's it. That is the MAGA forever plan. That's it. And then I got to thinking about this. Should I care whether the Supreme Court saves Trump or not? Should I care about Colorado, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Nevada? Should I care about it? Should I care one iota about making sure that the justice system does justice? When the Laura Loomers, the Alex Bruiserwitzes, when the surrogate crowd of Donald Trump spent most of the first half of this year attempting to not just discredit, but to disqualify Ron DeSantis from the ballot. The very thing that they are accusing the left of attempting to do to Donald Trump, they attempted. They want unity from us, demand unity from those of us who don't fully support in the primary Donald Trump. Demand that loyalty and unity because we have to unify. This is constitutional crisis time. Except for you used constitutional crisis time and lawfare against Ron DeSantis. As Pedro Gonzalez points out in a post on X, Team Trump launched a bogus ethics complaint in March to try to ballot disqualify DeSantis. They tried to weaponize the system against him. No one, not even Tucker Carlson, said anything. But after the Colorado decision to disqualify Trump, DeSantis called on SCOTUS to kill it because it's the right thing. I agree with him. He continues saying, so what did Team Trump do? They immediately used the moment to attack DeSantis and his supporters. Trump allies said he is a POS, especially the Laura Loomers of the world. They called him a piece of excrement. DeSantis, who said the Supreme Court should intervene in Trump's defense. And they are going to keep attacking him and his supporters because they don't actually care about unity or principle. Gonzalez continued saying the following, Matt Gaetz recently said he hoped there would be unity after a primary, regardless of the outcome. I doubt there will be, and this is why. It's also the reason Democrats win in the end. They are competent. They know how to use power. And I want to stop right there, right? On the they know how to use power. There's no easier way of showing that than Super Tuesday in 2020. That was Bernie Sanders, a little mix of Pete Buttigieg, or Buttigieg, or whatever. It was a mix of, we might have an actual real socialist on our top of the ticket, and that's bad for business. And they put their thumb on the scale and said, time for playing around is over. That, folks, is what Pedro is talking about. But he continues saying, they reward friends and punish enemies. Whenever we say, quote, they've really overreached this time, or now they've crossed the Rubicon, they always come out fine, often stronger than before. It's also due to the fact that Democrats tend to stick together. The GOP, as currently constituted and led, has none of the above going for it. Moments when we should have unity are reduced to opportunities for scoring cheap points against Trump's rivals. The previous big conservative news cycle was Trump demanding Chip Roy to be tossed out of the GOP simply because Roy didn't endorse him. Team Trump attacked Roy in the most vicious, disgusting way. But like DeSantis, Roy denounced the Colorado decision and defended Trump. It's the right thing, although Roy won't be rewarded for that. Republicans are doomed under the status quo in the long term. This is a movement of people who do not care about anything but staying in Trump's good graces. That's why Democrats have been on a winning streak. And I'm telling you this right now, Pedro is absolutely right on the talk of unity within Team GOP. It is loyalty to Trump, not loyalty to ideas. It is loyalty to personality versus loyalty to principles. And when you look at the left, do they care more about protecting Joe Biden or about Joe Biden being a symbol of principles? Do they care more about Obamacare getting passed, or did they, care more about Obamacare getting passed than Obama? You can make a case that Obama was some sort of a cultish figure for a lot of people on the left, and you would be right, because he also represented something. He was a representation of values. Is Donald Trump a representation of any values, any principles, or is it about him and his personality? And that's why we lose. It's never about the actual championing of values and principles and those principles and values in action. It's about the personality. It always has been. When we put our thumb on the scale, it is always to the disservice of our principles, values, and base on the right or the right-leaning libertarian side of things. It always has been. It is how we got George W. Bush. It is how we got Mitt freaking Romney, John freaking McCain. Look at Romney. He is the prototype for today's Democrats. What do you mean by that? In Massachusetts, he took on conservative Catholics, tried to force abortion upon them, same-sex marriage. Look at what he did with Romney Care, so-called, in the state of Massachusetts. He literally gave the incubator to Obamacare. And we decided to take the fight off the table by nominating Mitt Romney? That's interesting, right? Back then. And what are we going to do today? We're going to rehash the 2020 personality election versus somebody who you may think is a little awkward on the stage or weird on the stage or whatever you want to call it, but has that proven track record. Interesting. But Team Trump is asking me to believe and get behind when they're doing this.
You're single, correct?
Yeah.
So how intimidating are you for a fellow to ask, to have ask you out?
Well, it's not like I'm vicious in that sense, but a lot of people just can't handle my lifestyle and I'm very busy. Just, you know, I'll tell you a funny story. I dated somebody one time and they thought that I was, you know, too focused on Trump. And they said that I gave my activism in support of President Trump more attention than I gave them. And it's like, yeah, that's right, because Trump is more important than you. Trump is going to save our country. And so you need to understand that President Trump is more important than you. And if you think that you're more important than President Trump, then you have some kind of like delusional personality disorder. So that was the end of that relationship. President Trump's my number one priority right now.
and so he should be.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, it's been great fun.
Bow down to Donald Trump over a personal relationship. What the hell? We also need then to understand that this is the other side of the coin that we are dealing with.
Don't want to say he's perfect. The only perfect person that ever walked this earth is Jesus, but he was wonderful in office for 4 years and he proved that. So what is it about Trump that you love so much?
Number one, he's a godly man. He's working for God, for darn sure. Number two, he really cares about us. He cares about us. He cares about what happens to us. He cares about our country. He didn't come in there because he wanted the money. He's got money. He's came in there because he is actually working for God and he wants to help us and he wants to get us to a good, he wants to make America great again. And I you know, it's true, you know, but I think he's going to make it even greater because I don't.
That, folks, is why I call this the cult of MAGA forever. There's no plan. There's no idea. What is MAGA? What is Make America Great Again? What's the platform of that? I don't know. All I know is that it's Donald Trump. Principles, policies, and working towards enacting them win elections. Personalities can help win an election. We cannot expect unity. I can't unify with that. I have nothing in common with that. Why? I have nothing in common with either of them. Because Ron DeSantis, because Trump, because any human being on the face of God's green earth right now, no, you ain't it. Show me your deeds. Show me your works. Show me your policies. Show me what you're going to actually do to enact, to champion. Blind allegiance, no. No. When we look at Jesus Christ and the disciples, did he just say simply follow me? Yeah, he did. But it was follow me and I will show you the way. Are we expecting Donald Trump to show us the way towards what? This is all insane. I can't unify with that. I never will. And nor should anybody in the sound of my voice be wanting to unify with that. Just no. There's nothing more WTF than he is doing it for God. No. No, he's not. He's a godly man. That's the worst of any argument to vote for Donald Trump. If you want to make the argument that we were more prosperous and better in foreign policy than we are today, okay, that's a proper argument. That's a one that I can at least handle. I can poke holes in it, but I can handle it because it's somewhat true and it's at least dealing in reality land. So congratulations on that. But all of this to say, you don't have a plan. And from what I can see, the only plan would be what? Some sort of real insurrection and would you believe then if the 2024 election, if Donald Trump is in jail, a felon, ineligible to because he's been charged and convicted of insurrection with January 6th. If he's actually ineligible then to participate, but he was the nominee of the Republican Party, are you suggesting that Rona McDaniel, that Speaker Johnson, Minority Leader McConnell should be leading some sort of bloody revolt and we have to alter the ties that bind our country? Is that the suggestion? Is that the plan? If so, what plan is in place to take on the might of an ever increasingly powerful leftist government at that point? What do you have other than personality? And if you know anything about dictatorships, if you know anything about the history of personality, the cults of personality, they lead to absolutely disgusting, dehumanizing, and terrible atrocities. And I want none of it. Because short of taking away our constitutional republic and replacing it with the cult of Trump, what plan do you have to change and alter the ties that bind us? Because at that point in time, I would kind of be with the argument that we don't live in a constitutional republic anymore. But then what is the answer? And I'm waiting to hear it from anybody. I will tell you this right now, in 2024, before the Iowa caucus, I welcome anybody from the MAGA Forever camp that's within the sound of my voice to come onto this program, and I will shut up, and I will give you the floor to lay out the plan for how Trump can win and alter everything, or in case he doesn't win, your plan. I will give you the floor to give us that plan. I will ask questions of that plan and the feasibilities and all of that. I certainly will. But I welcome anybody. I challenge anybody within the sound of my voice who's on that MAGA Forever train. Come aboard the critical thinking train and lay the plan out. I welcome it. Now, with that being said, I guarantee you exactly zero people will take me up on that challenge. Why? Because none of them know what the plan is. Because none of them have thought through the plan other than grievance. Grievance is one thing. Yes, you've got grievances. Yes, I believe that lawfare is being put upon you. But what are you going to do about it? Because simply saying, well, the Supreme Court will stop it, is the most insane thing I have ever seen. What in world history suggests that that is a thing that will actually happen for you? And the other side will just say, you know what? I fervently believe that this man is an absolute disgrace to democracy, to our republic, to whatever. Just because the Supreme Court, you know what? Screw it. I'm done. They're not stopping. They won't stop at anything. So what are you willing to do? What are you willing to do? What is the plan? Lay it out for me, folks. Now, speaking of plans and best laid plans or worst laid plans and immigration, we're going to talk about Chicago because apparently now that we've hit wintertime, folks, we can't do what we've always wanted to do here. We can't just allow migrants into the street all the time. But we've also now introduced ordinances to attempt to curb the movement of migrants to the great city of Chicago after months and months and months, after 6, 7, 8, 9 months, whatever it has been, of Chicago being a busing center for migrants. From the Washington Examiner, Chicago-bound immigrants are dropped off in secret locations so that drivers can avoid fines. That's right. The bus drivers, you're the bad guys, and the bus companies, you're the bad guys here. How dare you bus those migrants here? But we're a welcoming city. So the news here, bus drivers who are transporting illegal immigrants from the United States' southern border to Chicago are dropping them off now in secret locations to avoid fines from the city. The bus drivers reportedly are shuttling immigrants to various spots around the city, but not at shelters or police stations where they can get help. And that's right, folks. Like, if you were to go to the local district police office here, which is literally a 10-minute walk or so away, up until about 3-4 weeks ago, you would have seen massive tents and migrants sleeping inside and outside and just a horrible mess waiting to happen. Without you physically being there and seeing it and witnessing it, I can't put it into words how wow it was. And then the migrant shelters that were supposed to be temporary, which really haven't been temporary. They've just been temporary for the people that are living there temporarily. And then we're just cycling straight through those temporary people as they mature out. And then new ones come, and then new ones come, and then new ones come. But I digress, because I haven't seen... Oh, wait, that's not even 500 yards away from me. Anyway, Christina Poikon Zayas, Chicago Mayor Brendan Johnson's deputy chief of staff, told the Chicago Tribune the following, quote, "Obviously, they're trying every way to work around this. Since we've instituted the ordinance and the amendment, we have lost all communication with the border. They're not sending us any notices. When they come without notice and coordination, it starts to undermine what we're trying to do." Oh, so you're saying that you're trying to what? Give them some sort of dignity or plan or... No, you're really not, actually. No, you're really not. You are attempting to put them into really leftist boot camps. You're exposing them to leftist activists who are making money hand over fist in that grift, by the way. Leftist organizations making literally tens of thousands of dollars in the course of one weekend. Over and over and over and over and over again. For providing quote-unquote healthcare services. Now, it's not totally clear where some of these people are being dropped off, but some are being transported to Chicago suburbs like Cicero or Rosemont near the O'Hare International Airport remote parking lots. But suburbs are now taking action to prevent buses from arriving again, according to the Washington Examiner. Cicero has approved a measure to fine bus companies $750 per person for letting out homeless immigrants. By the way, it's not homeless. It's unhoused. You absolute racist in Cicero. Anyway, Chicago is also suing bus companies and seeking the ability to impound buses and fine owners $3,000 if they do not follow Chicago's rules limiting the time and frequency of arrivals. The city has already filed 50 lawsuits against bus drivers. Almost 26,000 immigrants have been transported to Chicago since August of 2022. That number, by the way, is absolute BS. That number is probably double that. But anyway, Johnson recently unveiled plans to house nearly 2,000 immigrants in tents near Brighton Park during the winter months. But J.B. Pritzker nixed the first plan after a report highlighted environmental concerns because, you know, we have to protect the environment and do well by these individuals because we're such a welcoming city here. Now, also, some of these people that own properties that are privately owned that have been turned over to immigrant shelters, the grift here is simply this. We're going to be able to run these properties down, then get them condemned, and then build whatever we want on them instead of what is currently there. I'm telling you that right now. I'm seeing it with my own two eyes. The degradation of a historical property by the mass amounts of immigrants that are just destroying the property because they have no care for it. I'm telling you right now, the grift is this. These people have multi-million dollar renovation projects in the works, except for they have to work around the National Historical Registry properties, or they have to work around the current zoning. Well, you know what? It's a blighted property. City pay for that, and we're going to tear down that blighted property since it's absolutely no longer historically valuable. I guarantee you that's what's going down, and nobody is paying attention to it. Instead, we're going to get just disgusting misuse of property all over this city going forward. How nobody sees it is beyond me. All right, but and then to see what we see on the southern border, folks, where the videos that we saw of the most amount of migrants to come in a single day at Eagle Pass in Texas, right? Yeah, that's a crisis, folks. When we see literally tens, if not double digit tens of thousands, meaning 20,000 or so, maybe 18, I think it was. We've never seen this before. But the Biden administration is literally doing nothing about it. In fact, its policies, its ambiguity on its policies is creating the issue. They're not shutting the crossings down. They're not literally screaming at the top of their lungs to the NGOs, to the people that are hook, line, and sinker involved in all of these chains of people coming across the border to say no, 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 to make it very clear that asylum has a very specific set of circumstances and we're going to apply that. And if you just show up at the border, you don't get to enter and claim asylum. You have to go through the right process and channels. Never mind the broader discussion of our actual broken legal immigration system that is causing 90% of this problem in the first place. Never mind the absolute dereliction of duty from Alejandro Mayorkas, the director or the head of Homeland Security. The absolute dereliction of duty. We're not sending any message to those who are attempting to abuse the legitimate asylum claim that some people do have, by the way. We're not doing anything to shut that down. We're not shutting the border down. We're not saying, hang on, hold up, wait a minute. Let's get our house in order. Let's not allow anybody in. No more work visas, no more visas for students, no more anybody coming in. We're putting an absolute pause on all immigration, and we're going to get this right. And we're going to, no. And by the way, here's what asylum means. Here's what the process is. Here's the reality. And if you want to abuse that, we're not going to allow you to do so. We're just unwilling to do it. Because we're such an unserious person. This could be stopped quickly by a clear and direct communication and application of the law. they understand we're not going to actually apply the law. And once they're here, they're getting all sorts of bennies. I've also talked about the need to stop with the, okay, for these people, they have to sit here in our shelters and suckle off the teat for 5 months before they're eligible to work. Look, this is the reality on the ground, folks. I would much rather them having the ability to work than them flooding our stores and begging and harassing people all over the place. Crime and drugs and prostitution and all sorts of craziness that is going on. Not at every immigrant shelter, mind you. Not on every migrant shelter, but at a lot. It's just the lack of common sense around this. And the WTF of, well, you know, we really want these bus drivers to drop them off correctly. And we want to care for these people. But we're going to make it so that we're actually really, we don't want you. We're going to find the bus drivers and the bus driver companies, and we're going to sue them, and we're going to do this. Because we really are not all that welcoming anymore. Because we're now faced with the reality that you on the southern border are faced with. The message should be to our federal government to stop this. And do we hear that from the mayor of San Francisco, the mayor of Chicago, the mayor of New York, banding together and saying, stop it? No. And finally, to end the end-all be-all, if you will, of this insanity on WTF Wednesday comes from an ex-mediocre, at best, NFL running back. And look, congratulations, you got to the NFL. I could never have done it. I don't have an ounce of your athletic ability. That doesn't mean I can't interpret athletic ability. It doesn't mean that I don't know how the game is played or how to play the game. Or I don't know how to read a play or sit in a classroom and learn. No. Pretty sure I do. Pretty sure. Yeah, pretty sure. But this from Rashad Mendenhall, the ex-mediocre Steelers running back. I'm sick of average white guys commenting on football. Y'all not even good at football. Can we please replace the Pro Bowl with an all-black versus all-white bowl so these cats can stop trying to teach me who's good at football? I'm better than your goat. I'm better than your goat? Just going to say this for posterity's sake. You are not, we're not, we're never, ever better than, going to be better than, Christian McCaffrey. That's who you're referencing. He is an all-time great. He is an all-timer. Period, point blank. He is revolutionary when it comes to playing the running back position. In fact, he's not really just a running back. He is the most versatile offensive weapon in NFL history. Just so happens to be white. Who cares? He is Michael Vick. He is to the running backs what Michael Vick was to quarterback. That's who he is. Sorry, not sorry on that one. But more importantly than that, folks, can you even take this seriously? Because the question that I have and I've posed is he racist or suffering from CTE or just flat out crazy? Because what I refuse to engage in is his racism. I'm not going to be like the morons all over the internet who are coming up with the all-time black versus all-time white team and the all-white team today versus the all-black team today and various incarnations of well, we're only going to take those who are alive versus who's alive or whatever have you, because it's engaging and normalizing that racist behavior. Now, the answer to the question of is he racist or is this head trauma, CTE? We don't know if it's CTE. We don't. We don't have the ability to know that, unfortunately, until somebody dies. And hopefully we can figure that out ahead of time going forward, because it would dramatically help the health, safety, and well-being of those players, those ex-players, and their communities, their families, every point in between. It would just be healthier as we figure out how to recognize it, how to deal with it, and whatnot. But the evidence suggests this absolutely is because he's racist. And maybe that racism is part of the head trauma. That could be the case. But the evidence is suggesting that he is, because this is not the first, not the second, not the third. This has probably absolutely been ingrained in him ever since he was a little kid. And what do I mean by that? Well, if you take a look at Rashad Mendenhall, right? Who is he? Well, he was born in 1987 in Skokie, Illinois. So a direct northern suburb. Literally, you wouldn't know you were in Skokie until you were almost out of Skokie. Like it has a hook on public transportation into the city of Chicago. That's how close it is. It's kind of like Evanston is, you know, a suburb. It's definitely a different feel and vibe. No questions about it. But you actually have to pay attention to know that you're not in Chicago, okay? The point in bringing this up is that there's a lot of anti-white racism within the black community in Chicago, and it is taught vis-a-vis, you know, the whole the South Side Malcolm X black nationalist movement, okay? This is an ingrained thing that happens here. This racism is taught prevalent. It is very prevalent in the black community here in Chicago. Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam is here. And you see it when you go to different community events and festivals and things on the South Side. You'll see their direct menacing presence. And by menacing, I mean on purpose menacing. They're dressed in menacing garb. You know exactly who they are, what they're about, and don't mess with the Nation of Islam. But it's directly taught racism. It's directly taught hatred of white man and white men bad and all that. But it isn't the first, it isn't the second, it isn't the third, it isn't the fourth time that we've seen him tweet out or say or spew absolute racist garbage. Look at what he did with Ben Roethlisberger and I think it was it A.J. Brown or I forget exactly who it was, but his old quarterback, I believe it was Ben Roethlisberger. That's right. It was Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown. Also crazy, by the way. Ben Roethlisberger, probably not the greatest of human beings, right? But attempting to pull the race card in that whole debacle that happened back in 2019. Look at what he has said about Osama bin Laden, 9/11. So I think the definition of all of this is that he is both racist and suffering from some sort of head trauma. But I think the absolute best take on all of this actually came from Robert Griffin III. So I'm just going to play it for you.
Dear Rashard Mendenhall, some will joke about how you fumbled in the Super Bowl, but they never got there. They'll joke about how you have CTE. They may even spend hours putting together an all-white and an all-black team and try to explain who would win. But what they won't tell you is, this is the tweet of a dumbass. Don't be a dumbass. Your prejudiced, discriminatory, racial ideologies would set us back centuries. We don't want to go back to the old times. I don't want to participate in the segregation bowl. Probably wouldn't even get a shot because Patrick Mahomes would be the quarterback of our team. Yes, he would be on our team. And by our team, I mean the All Blacks. Because I know a lot of y'all like to joke about what team I'm on because of this guy. Because my wife is a beautiful Estonian queen. But the bottom line is, the third string all black team would beat the all white team by 2 scores. But honestly, that's not the point. The truth is that any person of any creed, any race, any color, any background, or any gender can give their analysis on football and give their opinion. It doesn't mean they're right, but you also don't have to listen. So Rashard, don't be a dumbass. And stop saying stupid shit. Hey, but also, when is this game?
Can you put it any better than what RG3 said? And I find RG3 sometimes to be an absolute clown of a commentator himself. But he right here. He absolutely is right. All right, so I also hinted at talking about the Pope and some of the things that are going on. I might actually save this for Friday because we're going long here. But let me just say this. To the all of the people who are not Catholic, you actually have to understand how Catholicism from a organizational apparatus operates. It would be like me telling the Southern Baptist or commentating on the Southern Baptist Convention's machinations. I don't know them. I'm not involved in it. I'm not a member of the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm not Baptist in any way, shape, or form. All I can do is interpret language from a lay perspective. But until you understand the machinations and the meanings of blessings versus sacraments and liturgy, unless you know those differences, I would be very careful about saying that the Pope coming out and saying blessing those of the same-sex attraction or same-sex couples or whatever have you means an avowed endorsement of same-sex marriage. I would be very careful on that, but I also will see you this, that the slippery slope argument is an actually pretty good argument to be made because of the history of this Pope. But I'm going to save, I think, the vast majority of this for Friday's show before we get into reviewing 2024, because this is a very intricate and nuanced issue, and I don't think we have the time for it on today's program. Just know that whatever both sides, whether it's the Pope is telling you that that same-sex marriage is really going to be a thing in the Catholic Church, is wrong. Also, those who are telling you that this is absolutely not a slippery slope are also wrong. It's somewhere in between, and that's the problem. All right? It's the ambiguity. It is the wanting to split the baby, if you will, here. That is my problem with this from a Catholic understanding of this. And it's important. So we're going to go through this. We're going to understand what the language means, what it means to those who are Catholic and practicing Catholic, those who understand the language of Catholicism, what it means, and then also how to speak on it to the generalized public. And it's important to understand it. So we're going to go through this on Friday's program. With that being said, folks, please have yourselves a great rest of your day. I hope the upcoming holiday season is not having you overwhelmed, is not having you stressed out. And if so, may I suggest just taking in some funny videos and spending some time with maybe National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and some other things like that. But until tomorrow, in our interview with Carrie McDonald of the Liberated Podcast, please be smart, be safe, be kind, make sure you eat all of your meals. And as always, Matthew 5:47.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.